Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
Kia ora, Tracy. How are you going today?
I'm good, thanks, Jemina. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So last week and over the weekend, it was announced that several New Zealand First candidates have been confirmed, including yourself running in the Rodney electorate. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
We've also got Anne Parler running for Kelston, as well as Helen Peterson for Helensville. But one of the announcements that's caused a lot of discussion about the party's prospects going into this year's election, though, is the confirmation that the high-profile ex-Labor Party MP Shane Jones is running for the seat in Whangarei. The Herald published an article a few days ago titled, "Will Shane Jones be New Zealand First's Trump Card?" What's your take on this, Tracy? Can we draw parallels between Shane Jones and Donald Trump?
Well, I don't. I don't draw any parallels between Shane Jones and Donald Trump. I haven't seen anything similar. I didn't read the article, I'm sorry. So somebody would have to explain that to me. I don't see any similarities at all. I don't know Donald Trump personally, agreeably.
I mean, but his speech clearly drew parallels between himself and Trump, though. I mean, he said that there's something in the air that's been being sensed by voters in America, Australia, the EU, all around the world. He was even wearing a hat that had the Trump-like slogan, "Make New Zealand First Again." I mean, surely it's clear he's hoping to capitalise on the rise of anti-establishment and the populist wave sweeping the world at the moment.
I think you'll find that New Zealand First itself, across the board, is one of those political parties that has connected into the fact that many of the voters are feeling disenfranchised from the standard political parties. Many of the voters of New Zealand don't feel like Labor or National, the standard first-past-the-post parties, have actually listening to them at all, that they've become too arrogant and disconnected. So if they, you know, and I would agree with Shane on that one. I think the hat was a lovely little twist on a gimmick. His boy had one as well, and there was a photo. It got the response we needed from the media, which was everybody thought it was a great little gimmick.
But then again, does he really fit in with the party's anti-establishment agenda, though? I mean, this was certainly a central facet of his speech on Friday, but I mean, he's been in politics for a long time. He's just finished up with a diplomatic role. Is this more a case of there being speculation that he has anti-establishment and populist appeal than there actually being evidence that this is the case?
Well, I don't know. You could say the same thing about the Right Honourable Winston Peters. He's been in politics for 40 years. You would have to look at the career of each politician in their own right to see how establishment or anti-establishment they are. If you look at Shane Jones's career and the number of times that he spoke out on issues, if you look at the fact that he left the Labor Party over issues and then took up a position that was offered to him by the National Party, what you've got is somebody who is anti-establishment. Winston Peters has denied himself several opportunities politically because of things that he believes in, that he's prepared to stand up for. So just because you're inside the tent doesn't mean that you're therefore, you know, 100% establishment. You've got to be inside this tent to make any difference.
In terms of Jones's track record, he got in a little bit of trouble in 2010 when it came out that he used his Crown credit card to rent pornography while he was staying at hotels on government business. And so as the party spokesperson for women, do you think this aspect of Jones's past might alienate female voters?
No, I think like many women, I probably did exactly the same thing that most of my female counterparts did, was we shook our heads in disappointment. But let's be clear, Mr. Jones paid for, on his credit card, the hotel room, and that included a charge, so he didn't specifically go out of his way to go to an adult store and buy something on his parliamentary card. As soon as it became public, as soon as the parliamentary services told him he paid back the money, as soon as it became public, he publicly admitted it. It's not an illegal act. I think you've only got to look at a person in the last couple of weeks that has committed an illegal act, that has denied all knowledge, that has not, cooperated with the police, to put Shane, who fronted immediately and took full responsibility, to put that little incident into perspective.
Does it not raise any questions around his views about women or exploitation of women?
Not to me.
So he's also running in the Whangarei seat against National's Shane Riti. Do you think he has a chance to overthrow Riti, even though Riti has a 13,000 majority?
Well, I think we learnt from Northland that you can never say never. The other thing I would say is that Shane Retty is an absolutely lovely man, but I don't think politics is the career for him, because he's probably far too nice. So I think Shane's got as good a chance as anybody if he puts in the miles, puts in the effort, and if the people believe that he will make a difference for Whangarei, and he's committed to making a difference for Whangarei.
And so there's also been talk of Jones one day taking over as leader if Peters was to step down. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think Jones has the same charm, perhaps, as Peters does?
I always find this conversation about succession planning by the media incredibly interesting, as if New Zealand First doesn't have a depth of talent. And I think Lloyd Burr's comments that, you know, we're a whole lot of no-name MPs. If the media doesn't know our name, whose job is it to actually go and find out and report to the New Zealand public, those of us that are actually sitting in the New Zealand First caucus? So it's always amusing to hear these succession plan conversations. New Zealand First caucus has a whole lot of depth here, and there's any number of people that could step up. Right now, there is no need for a succession. We have a brilliant leader, and he's taking us in 2017.
Mm. Well, you do have to admit, though, that Peter's charisma is definitely a strong part of his appeal to a lot of voters for New Zealand First.
I agree, but has anybody noticed Fletcher Tabatow's charisma, or Clayton Mitchell's energy and vitality, or Derek Ball's in-depth knowledge around social services, or Tracy Martin's amazing way of interacting with a crowd? You know, there's a lot of depth here. Right now, Winston Peters is our leader, and we're focused towards 2017. But these conversations in the media just don't reflect what is the true nature of New Zealand First.
Mm. I mean, I guess it's not just the media, though. It's also voters who like to have, you know, who are looking for a strong leader, that they sort of, it's not just about looking at the party's policies. People sort of do warm to the presence and the confidence and, you know, the competence of a leader. So it's not just the media sort of perpetuating this. It's definitely driven by voters' interests as well.
Well, and you're quite right, but I mean, at the end of the day, where do voters, if voters are not going to public meetings, where are voters picking up their information from? They're picking it up from mainstream media and mainstream television. But I'll admit to you right now, we have a very charismatic leader. Nobody's looking at replacing him, and certainly the New Zealand public is warming to him.
Mm. And so let's also talk about New Zealand First's insulation policy announced the other day to install 500,000 homes with adequate insulation over the course of 10 years. Can you give me a bit more detail about this policy?
Sure. It's virtually the same as the Warm Up New Zealand policy that ran for 6 years, and that's being axed next year by the current government. So, and what they're doing is they're axing it, but there's still 530 homes in New Zealand that need to be insulated. So New Zealand First is basically pledging to continue with the Warm Up New Zealand program and make sure that we get those homes insulated to stop people from being hospitalised.
Mm. And so the government's Warm Up New Zealand insulation scheme targeted low-income homeowners and tenants, and also those with high health needs. So is New Zealand First approach a little bit more broad than this?
It's mostly focused in the first instance upon low-income families, but it certainly shifts some of our focus away from landlords that have benefited, so that we can expand it across the poorer family homes and a wider spread across New Zealand.
Right. So perhaps over the course of 10 years, lower income homes will be targeted first as the program sort of unfolds.
Definitely.
And so, but is this the silver bullet to stopping New Zealanders being hospitalised, though? I mean, the Greens are not only promising to lift funding for the current insulation scheme, but also invest more in the rheumatic fever treatment program. What's New Zealand First's stance on this program? Would you increase its funding too alongside your insulation scheme plans?
I don't have the numbers or the policy that you're talking about with regard to what the Greens are putting forward, but certainly rheumatic fever, we cannot continue to have the, it doesn't make economic sense to downstream have the major costs that are associated with having a sick population, particularly in childhood. So while I can't give you a 100% commitment without having seen their numbers, I cannot imagine that New Zealand First is not also going to be investing in making sure that these childhood illnesses and things that happen to young children, that we stop as much as we can.
Great. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me again this week, Tracy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Shamina. Bye.
Bye.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire.